Happy Monday, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Boot K-12 Education Talk Radio, which is now part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, which is now where we keep all our shows archived, etc. We have great information over there. The American Consortium for Equity in Education is open to all educators free of charge. We invite you to join if you care about equity, and we think you do, just like we do. Our magazine is over there, which is called Equity in Access. It's an online journal. It's absolutely terrific. If I do say so myself, go check it out. All right? Join with us. Again, it's free over at ace-ed.org. You'll see an icon there for podcasts. It has all podcasts that we do over there. We have a wonderful show for you this morning. I got to tell you, my good friends, Curriculum Associates, okay, have Dr. Kristen Huff. Excuse me. Jeez, all of a sudden I got backed up there. Dr. Kristen Huff is here. She's the VP of Assessment and Research over at Curriculum Associates. And also we have Dr. Paula Price, who's the Dean of the College of Education at North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University. And for some reason, I have three lines open and two guests, and I can't figure that out. So let me go over this. Who's at 718? Anybody?
Hi.
Who's that?
Kristen Huff.
Hello, Kristen. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning. How are you, Larry?
Good. I'm just fine, thank you. And also, I have 2336 numbers open. Dr. Price, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Hi. Let me ask, are you calling? I have two lines from 336. Is one of them yours, I assume?
Yes.
I don't know who the other one is.
I have no idea either.
Well, without giving the exchange, are you at 2795?
No.
Okay, then that number I am cutting out of there, and let that just circle for a second. Sorry about that. I just wanted to make sure. I don't know who that person is. They can listen. What can I tell you? We have interlopers coming in. All right. It's a pleasure to have both of you ladies here. We're going to talk about taking action to support diversity in education and assessment, a wonderful idea and a great partnership between North Carolina A&T and my good friends over at Curriculum Associates. Kristen, Dr. Huff is VP of Assessment, which I love, and Research at Curriculum Associates. But you were a senior fellow at the New York State Department of Education, right, Kristen?
That's right, Larry.
Okay, then I have to ask you a question. When are we going to get rid of the word fellow for ladies who move up in all these organizations? Why are you still called fellows?
That's right. That's a different research project I have going on. I'll get back to you on another show on that one.
I'm going to change the show for She's a Jolly Good Kristen, for She's a Jolly Good Kristen. I'm going to sing it like that. Okay. Thank you. It's just absolutely amazing. You're also co-chair of the National Council on Measurement in Education. Okay, their task force on classroom assessment. You've really got a great background, and I'm not surprised considering where you work. Dr. Price, are you there?
I am here.
Okay.
Yes,
Paula,
I am.
I don't know much about North Carolina A&T. I have a feeling that, and I may be wrong here, is it a historically black college? Is it one
of
those?
Yes, we are.
Congratulations.
Yes, we are. We are the largest historically black college in the country.
Get out of here. How many students go there?
We have roughly 13,000 students.
And where are you located besides the words North Carolina? Where in North Carolina?
We are in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Get out. You're kidding. North Carolina A&T, and is it still, because you're the dean of the College of Education, but the college is called North Carolina Agricultural and Technical, okay? And is it still agriculture and technical? Well, just go over a little bit of history of it before we get into this.
Sure, yes. It is very much a STEM-focused university. We have we're very much known for graduating the largest numbers of African-American students in engineering in the country and also in agriculture. So our College of Agriculture is very large, and we also
I love agricultural studies.
Yeah,
that.
We graduate the most African-American
students. That is STEM.
Of
that's career. STEM. Yeah, that's
it
STEM.
It is STEM.
Yeah, without question. Yep. Wow. Incredible. I can't believe it. How's things going this year, I mean, you must ask, because of the pandemic, what's going on?
You know, I have to say this university community has been extremely resilient. We were able to actually stay open. A lot of universities were closed during the pandemic, but our administration and our students really followed protocols in terms of wearing their masks and social distancing. And so we were able to remain open throughout the fall semester, and we're
Great.
Gearing up for our students to return back in a couple weeks.
Good, and I hope they stay safe, and I hope all the professors
Absolutely.
And everybody stay safe without question. That's good news. And I want to just say, Paula is also the president of the American Educational Studies Association, where you've been a member. I want to read this for more than 22 years. Obviously, they let 10-year-olds in there, and then you 22 years later, you're now the president. Congratulations. Okay.
Thank
Very
you.
It's incredible. Okay. And you focus. I love this. You focus on the foundations of education, African American education, Native American and Indigenous education. You're really into this. Critical race theory, critical multi. You are right on top of this. Critical multicultural and anti-racist education. We have to get you involved in our American Consortium for Equity in Education, Paul. I'm going to be in touch with you. Okay?
Sounds good. You have my information.
I do. I have your email, and I'm going to get in touch with you, I promise, today. This is just amazing. And, Kristen, I'm always in touch with my friends over at Curriculum Associates, so don't feel left out.
I don't. Not at all.
Good. Now.
And good morning, Dr. Price. It's great to hear your voice. We have our work cut out for us, don't we?
Absolutely.
Do you both call each other doctor, or do you use your first names?
Well, in public,
I will always prefer
to Dr. Price as Dr.
Do you
Price.
Want doctor? Do you want me to say doctor, or do you want me to do Paul and Kristen? Kristen? Doctor?
Kristen,
thank you.
We can be more informal.
Just
That's
double
fine.
Checking here.
Larry.
Just double checking here. I didn't want to insult anybody, for goodness sake. It's Dr. Price and Dr. Huff, okay? Everybody knows that now. All right? And both graduates of the University of Larry. That's me. So they have these incredible doctorate degrees. It's unbelievable. All right. Now, how did you – I'm going to go back to Kristen. Kristen, how did you – two groups, Curriculum Associates and North Carolina A&T, meet up? What prompted this? Let's start there.
Well, in 2020, we decided that we really – in our mission to serve – all students and to make classrooms better for teachers and students all across this nation, to double down on our commitment to diversity, cultural relevance in our instruction and curriculum and assessment. And so, of course, North Carolina A&T is just the ideal partner in so many ways. Not only is it one of the nation's first, but as Paula said, it's the nation's largest HBCU. Stellar College of Education and innovation. Yes, the College of Education's Innovation and Education Initiative, which Paula can speak in more detail to. But it's also their willingness and eagerness to partner with us on researching, and we hope over time resolving, some of the nation's most pressing needs in education for traditionally marginalized students, particularly what can we do in the field of assessment to decrease, if not eliminate, the persistent bias and adverse impact. It's also the real connections that Paula's faculty have, not only in their scholarship, but the fact that we have access to a robust pre-service and in-service teacher network. And also, I have to say, North Carolina is my home state. I'm a proud graduate of the K-12 public education system, and I have 2 degrees from UNC Greensboro, which is just down the street from A&T.
There you go. So. Now I figured it out. That's great. Congratulations. Wow, good for you. And by the way, it snowed there other day.
Miracle.
Paula. Yeah, Paula? Did it snow?
Yeah, we received, I guess it was called snow. I just moved here from the Northwest, so to me it was a dusting, but here in North Carolina it was considered snow. But, of course, all is clear now.
of course, it was an eighth of an inch, and that shut down traffic.
Exactly.
I live in Maine, and where are you from? Washington State, Northwest. Is that where you're from?
I'm from California, but I lived in Washington State for 19 years.
Okay, then I'll give you the word of advice. Don't go try to go through any of the Washington State passes, the mountain passes this week. They're terrible.
Oh, yes.
They're brutal.
Yes.
My wife got stuck in one time driving. Okay, it was clear on both sides and a blizzard, a 75-inch blizzard up top. It's unbelievable. Welcome to North Carolina and go make a snowman. Hurry.
Yeah.
It's going to get to be 75 degrees in just a few minutes. You know, what from your point of view, and you don't, I think we probably understand this, you're an expert in, I'll call it cultural history of education. Okay, you really go into the cultural stuff. Where do you see, Paul, that there is a challenge, and I know there is, but I want you to try to articulate it in assessment. Okay, for kids of marginalized, underrepresented groups, we'll just put all that together. Yeah, where do you see?
Yeah,
that?
There are a number of challenges in assessments. I think a lot of schools have tried to become more culturally responsive in their curriculum, and so we're seeing a lot of lesson plans and a lot of teachers that are doing a lot more work in that area. However, the assessments aren't necessarily connected to those. So in other words, while we see some movement and we see growth in curriculum and teaching, oftentimes the way that students are assessed is also falling to very old sort of ways that don't that isn't really congruent with the way students are taught. And so that causes a number of issues because on the one hand, it's not necessarily accurate. It's not an accurate portrayal of what students know and what students can do. And so it's really important that we are looking at assessments and looking at ways to make them more culturally responsive because we want to be accurate. We want to paint an accurate picture of what students know and what students can do so that we can continue to move them forward and have them progress.
Right. You're absolutely right there. Okay, we do have to make sure. So where do you want this to go? I'm going to ask Paula, where do you want this to go? And then, Kristen, you're on the, I'll say it this way, although you're totally involved in education, on the corporate side, so to speak. Where do you guys want it to go? So let's start with Paula. When all said and done, you do your work, you do your research, what do you want to happen? What's the end game here? Paula, Dr. Burns.
Well, I would love to see us completely transform education in ways that really are much more culturally congruent and culturally sustaining for students and families. I really think that if we can be overtly anti-racist in our approaches and very intentional about how we approach cultural responsiveness, I think that we will see a lot of improvements in education across the board. And then, of course, when you talk about K-12, I think that just improves the experience for students. And then it also trickles into higher education. And so for me, I'd like to see some real big changes. I think that we've got to do a lot more that is really intentional, and really looking at systemic inequality, looking at the ways in which our systems have been set up in many ways to not be fair for a lot of students. And so we've got to tackle a lot of those issues. And I think assessment is just one of the many things that we've got to really take a hard look at.
And can you? I'm going to ask you this because all those words, I agree with you 100%. Okay, but can you give a concrete example to the audience that you've seen that has particularly been non-culturally relevant? We always talk about those words, but we tend to just dance around them. Well, focus in on make it a little more specific, and just think of one that pops out.
Sure. Well, I think Kristen could probably give you, you know, she's more into kind of test bank questions and sort of looking at those things. But what I can tell you, and I haven't looked at, you know, I haven't looked at some of these more standardized assessments in a really long time. A lot of the work that I do is really more in working with teachers on their everyday assessments, right? The ways that they assess student learning in the classroom daily, right? We should always be assessing. It's not just about the standardized tests.
Absolutely.
So that we make sure that that's more congruent. But I will say that I think that a lot of the test anxiety that students experience. I was one who experienced great test anxiety. My children experienced test anxiety.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that's really common for a lot of students. And sometimes that is also grounded in feeling like you're afraid that you don't understand the way that things are worded. You don't necessarily understand what it's asking you. Right.
Excellent.
And there are different sort of, I don't want to get too much into linguistics, but there are different ways that that we can ask questions. And the type of words that are used are also significant.
That was a great answer, by the way. That was perfect. Add to that, Kristen. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to support every word that Paula said about her vision. We share that vision. As someone who has been trained and spent my career in the field of educational measurement, I do believe we are at an inflection point because the assessments we are not yet caught up with what's happening in the best high-quality curriculum and instruction in terms of cultural responsiveness and anti-racism. I mean the entire field of educational measurement. We are only at the very beginning, Larry, of undoing and changing and evolving our theories, methods, and practices to make our assessments culturally relevant and anti-racist. We don't even yet know how to do that. We are at the very beginning of figuring that out, and that is one of the reasons why this partnership with North Carolina A&T is so critical, because the field of educational measurement, it is like the teaching force in the United States, is deeply underrepresented by people of color, and especially Black scholars, Hispanic scholars. The field of educational measurement does not yet reflect the students whom we serve. So we cannot figure out this problem without deeper partnership with educators and educator scholars like the faculty at A&T College of Education. One of the examples, Larry, you asked for an example. I'll try to be brief, and then if we want to dig in, we can decide to do that. But
have to be that brief. We have plenty of time. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah. One of the examples that was of test bias that was peppered throughout the media in, I don't know, let's just say the late 80s through the early 90s, was a question from a standardized test, one of those analogy questions.
Sure.
Yacht is to marina as, you know, something,
yeah.
Right? And so
that
was a wonderful example of fleet.
Perfect example.
Oh, yeah, overt bias. I mean, what very small sample of students would understand those terms and that analogy, right? So the field of educational measurement over the last 20 to 30 years has done a tremendous job of stripping out and done a well-intentioned job through our question development guidelines of stripping out all of that kind of overt nonsense of yacht, marina, et cetera. However, we can go deeper. We can dig deeper. We know that students, especially marginalized students from historically and currently oppressed populations, do better in learning when they can make meaning of the content, when they can engage with the content, when they see their lived experience reflected in the content.
Mm-hmm.
Assessments are so dry and so neutral now that there's a lack of engagement. So as Paula referred to earlier, we have a strong hypothesis and we have data that tells us that these standardized assessments are likely, very likely, not revealing the true performance of these students because the assessments themselves
mm-hmm.
have an inherent bias. And so
mm-hmm.
we need to just rethink what an assessment can look like to be free of bias. We did version 1.0 over the last, let's say 20 to 30 years. Now it's time to take it to the next evolution. And we're at the very beginning stages of that. And that is one of the reasons this partnership is so key to us as we are figuring it out together.
And, you know, but you just said 20 to 30 years. We got to move faster than that, Kristen. Can we do that?
Yes, we do. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. I mean, we have to, right? Because if we don't, we will continue to perpetuate current inequities, which is unacceptable. It's unacceptable to curriculum associates. It's unacceptable to me personally.
No, it's unacceptable, period. But so let me go back to Dr. Price. Paula, okay, can we remove those things, okay, and still maintain I'll say it this way, a rigorous assessment, an assessment that actually measures educational capabilities for everyone. Is there a pathway to that? Paula, you deal with African-American kids and kids from all these groups. You study this all the time. So how do you mesh every culture? And I know you just said absolutely, I want to get into details, but how do you mesh every culture into an assessment? That's an interesting question. I'm so glad I asked it. Go ahead, Dr. Price.
Well, first, the answer is absolutely yes, we can, to reiterate what Kristen was saying. And I think, you know, sometimes there is a misconception about what culturally responsive education and about sort of what it means to have better representation within assessments means. It doesn't mean that you are sacrificing anything in terms of rigor or in terms of assessing particular skills. It just means that you are creating more entry points for various students to have contextual information to understand what the questions are really asking, what they're about, for them to connect to and engage with some of the passages, for example. You could very easily assess if a student understands capitalization, periods, utilizing, quotation marks correctly, all of those conventions, you can easily assess that utilizing a culturally based story or a story that has all white male characters. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What you might find is that if you have more varied passages or stories where you're trying to assess some of those skills, students might be more engaged in those stories. They might connect to them. They might actually be
mm-hmm.
excited about a test, right? Can't
mm-hmm.
you imagine that, being excited about taking a test? But it also is about making sure that students see themselves, right? Representation is really important. And, you know, part of the reason why we're really excited about this partnership here at North Carolina A&T is that I personally have not come across another company who has been willing to really look critically and deeply about some of their products, and then also want to involve educators and teachers and researchers in that process. And I think that's really, really key. I think that whenever you are developing assessments or curriculum packages or anything, the more that you are grounded in the research, the more that you involve actual real-life teachers who are teaching material, the better your products are going to be, because they are more reflective of the actual students who are going to be engaged with those assessments. And so we're just really thankful that Curriculum Associates is so overt with their commitment to anti-racism, to equity, and really is working with us. I think some of the opportunities that they are offering our students are also going to greatly enhance and strengthen the teachers that are going to be graduating from our programs and sort of going out into the field. They are going to be stronger in areas of assessment as well.
This is an interesting question. I mean, what percentage of your school is African American at North Carolina A&T? Is it not 100? Probably close.
I think overall, don't quote me on this. I want to say about 85% African American.
And you can quote her, everybody. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Don't quote her. Okay. So it's 85%. Okay. So your professors. Okay.
Yes.
Are they aware of any biases in their testing? Okay. I just want to throw that kind of back onto your professors there. How do they look at this? And they must look at this. They know that they're pretty smart people. Okay. Have you talked to them about this, especially your education professors?
Absolutely. So we have actually been undergoing a process where we've been looking at how to make our own program more culturally responsive.
Mm-hmm.
So our faculty for the last 3 years have been looking at their course syllabi. They've been looking at their assessments. They've been looking at all of the different projects that they've been having our students engage in with the lens of equity, diversity, and cultural responsiveness. So, yes, absolutely. Our faculty have not only been looking at it in terms of, teaching students to be more culturally responsive in terms of their teaching their assessment, but how are they modeling it, right? It's very imperative that we model it at the higher education level, because that is what students are also going to be taking with them into the classroom. And the same thing goes for use of technology, right? With the pandemic, we have been utilizing more Zoom classes trying to teach online and, virtually. And so we've had to think about how do we assess learning in a virtual environment, right? That's a whole nother area that we've had to really dig into. And so our faculty have also been really looking at and reflecting on their own practices. Absolutely.
And I ask that question because it's important that we self-reflect as we do this. And I'm going to just continue that line for a second. Were they surprised at something that came up? I mean, they're used to dealing with kids of African American descent, let's say 85% at the school, plus about 15% other. Okay, so everybody goes through this. What surprised them the most as they looked at this? These are really top flight professors. What surprised? They go, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. We were doing that. Did anything stand out like that?
Well, I have not actually, I haven't looked at all of the data, but I will tell you that in the meetings that I've had with our faculty and educator prep, they have been really focused on how do we fix things and how do we move forward to make them better. So I think that some are more overt with their epiphanies of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was doing that. That
exactly.
is so...
Yeah.
you know, inappropriate, or that was so not the right thing to do. Others are a little bit more silent about it, and they don't publicly share it, but they make those adjustments in the work that they do and in their own syllabi. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great answer and a great little part of the conversation. So what's Curriculum Associates going to do about all this? Where does it go as you look at this, Kristen, from, a corporate point of view? And by the way, you guys, you said something at the beginning of the show that you guys are finally, or quote, something like it's 2020 and you really want to catch up. You guys have always been excellent at this. Don't sell yourselves short. Okay? You guys are on top. I really mean that. You're a company that really is very well liked out there, and you've done a good job, and everybody can do better, but don't sell yourself short. But now it's time to move to, quote, you said, version 2.0, and do it a bit quicker than 20 or 30 years, okay? So, So where are we with just use your company as the example, Curriculum Associates. What do you want to see happen?
Thank you, Larry, for asking. I know that other organizations who create assessments for education are starting efforts around cultural responsiveness. I don't want to sound like perhaps we are the only one, but I truly do believe that Curriculum Associates is at the tip of the spear with this. We need to create epiphanies in the field of educational measurement. We need to create those epiphanies, and we're doing so. We have a panel of national experts that meets on a monthly basis to help us think through those issues. We are looking deeply at our assessment design practices, right? As I described before, the industry standard practice is to remove as much context as possible. That was from an intent of leveling the playing field. We need to change that. What does it mean for an assessment to be culturally relevant and to be anti-racist? Paula gave a great example about passages, okay? We need to figure out, well, what does that look like in algebra? We don't know yet, but we're working on it. Second, we're also looking at ways that we can more helpfully disaggregate and report testing data. For example, you know, these racial ethnic categories can be very misleading. Black, high-income, urban students are likely to have a very different educational performance trend than their peers in poor rural areas.
Great point.
We need to disaggregate the data that we have and really understand what's happening with those trends. And then just one last thing that I want to underscore that Paula mentioned. We've got to have the teacher voice at the table. So we're really excited about leveraging not only the scholars and faculty of North Carolina A&T, but their pre- and in-service teaching network.
That's great.
As well as the student voice. And we are in the process of figuring out how do we get, you know, if we're developing questions for middle schoolers, how do we get the middle school voice at the table earlier in the process? Because
give
we're
them
making
candy.
Assumptions
give them
about...
candy. Give them candy. Give them candy. Promise them
but
candy.
We do need to, if students want to feel engaged and, as Paula said, potentially even excited about an assessment, they need to have agency and voice in the decisions we're making about how we are assessing them. So we're looking at ways to not wait until the end of the process to do just, you know, we do a lot of, you know, user testing with students, but how do we pull them in earlier in the design process to help us figure out some of these thorny issues?
We got to do it, and we got about 5 minutes left, and I want you both to talk about this. I'm going to start this one with Paula. Paula, you guys are working together, North Carolina A&T and Curriculum Associates, and you've got a program that involves scholarships, and this is key to help recruit and retain deserving students to the education field. Now I'm just going to say ethnic groups, ethnic kids, okay, be it African American, Native American, whatever. This is key stuff. That's really important. I was just on the phone the other day with an organization, the Council of Administrators of Special Education, and they have an all-out initiative to try to get more African American and other ethnic groups into the field of teaching special ed. Okay, they really feel like they're way behind on that, and that's a challenge. And you can just extrapolate that out. So now you've got a program to help recruit and retain deserving students to education. Talk about that. I'll start with Dr. Price, and then we'll go over to Kristen. Okay, Dr. Huff, go ahead, Paula.
Yes.
Get these kids. Yes.
The scholarships are huge for us. The debt burden that students are carrying right now is really astronomical. And in fact, I'm glad that I went through my schooling so long ago that, you know, the amount of student loan debt that I was able, I'm still paying my student loans, by the way, but that I was able to sort of escape from is not nearly what it looks like for our students today. The other piece about that is education as a major is really expensive. And it's expensive because there are so many assessments that future teachers must pass in order to get their license. And so what we find is it is really difficult to recruit students into the field of education.
That's right.
Because it's so expensive of a major, and then oftentimes a lot, especially on our campus, a lot of the big scholarships are in those other areas and those other majors. And so historically what has been happening is a lot of students who really want to be teachers, they're going and getting degrees in content areas where they're able to have some scholarship support, and then they come back to do licensure later at a master's degree level because it's more economical that way because of the scholarship. So having these scholarships is really going to be a game changer for us to be able to support students throughout it. Also, the experiential experiences that students will have working with curriculum associates is also going to be huge. One of our pieces that we have this conceptual framework where we talk about being an Aggie educator, and Aggie is our that's our mascot here at A&T. But the A Aggie Educator stands for Assessment Leader. And so we really feel like the work with Curriculum Associates is really going to up our game and really ensuring that our graduates really are assessment leaders in the field of education.
Cool.
So we're just really excited about this.
You should be, and it's a great thing. What about from the Curriculum Associates point of view? And I have to say, Curriculum Associates has a list of all those teachers who use Curriculum Associates, which is up in the probably hundreds of thousands, okay? And that's a wonderful way to encourage people to get into the field of education. What's Curriculum Associates? You can send out the messaging, get these kids involved in education. We need teachers. Well, what's happening from the scholarship side, the Curriculum Associates side, Kristen?
Well, Paula
said
it best.
Yeah, I know.
Well, Paula did say it best around the educational force. I'll speak to this from the perspective of the field of educational measurement. Currently, to get a job in assessment design or educational measurement, one must go through a rigorous PhD program. There are PhD programs throughout the United States, and our cohorts of up-and-coming graduate students are getting more diverse compared to when I was in graduate school a few years ago. It is nowhere near the level of diversity required for our field, and here I'm talking about the field of assessment design and educational measurement, to reflect the students who are in the K-12 education system in the United States. We have got to reach down into the undergrad programs and let these these brilliant scholars know that there is a pathway to a different career where you're still serving teachers and you're still serving students, you're still serving the educational system, but you're doing it from the perspective of assessment, design, and measurement. And we've got to recruit these students early. And so I'm looking at a multi-year view with regard to this partnership of hopefully over the coming years transforming the population of professionals in my field to better reflect the students whom we
it's
serve.
It's interesting you said that because I have a niece who doesn't know what she wants to do when she graduates UMass with like a 4.0 average, and I said, why don't you go into education? She said, I don't want to become a teacher. Okay.
Well,
and
I said to her,
you could go into education and not become a teacher. It's a multi-layered onion, so to speak. And what you just said, I couldn't agree with you more on that. Go ahead. We got about a minute. Go ahead. Kristen? I think
Larry,
that was Kristen.
I'm also a UMass grad, and they have a wonderful program in educational measurement that's headed by a brilliant African-American scholar. So.
There you go.
There you go.
Your point was really well taken on that. You know, we need people with diverse backgrounds in all the levels of education, beyond just working in a school, okay? It goes way beyond that, okay? It really does. We got to go, ladies. I could talk to you for hours. I'm going to get in touch with you because I really want to talk to you about what we're doing here with our consortium and get you some more publicity on all this stuff. I think it's wonderful, okay? You guys are working hard. Thank you, and have a safe and happy 2021, which it is. Happy 2021.
Yes, thank you so
thank
much
you.
For having us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thank you
I'll
so
be
much.
Back in touch with you both. You both take care. Thank you so much for your time. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Kristen Huff, Dr. Huff, a senior fellow formerly of the New York State Department of Education, now with Curriculum Associates, where she is the VP of Assessment and Research, and obviously quite a good one. All right. And Dr. Paula Price, who's the Dean of the College of Education, Go Aggies at North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University, North Carolina A&T. Okay. Largest of the historically black colleges and universities. I just found that out today again. Go Aggies. All right. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. My name is Larry Jacobs. Thank you, ladies. Thank you to my friend Ross Romano for helping me set up this show. And, of course, to everybody over at Curriculum Associates. Thanks, everybody, for listening.